Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Coming up later, the truth about the robins in your garden. But first, you'll remember that a couple of weeks ago we heard from railway trackside resident Nadia Bishara about how people from Lancaster and Gurney Court Roads were pulling together to question Network Rail's plans to fell trees to make way for a new fence. Now, they eventually managed to arrange a meeting with representatives from Network Rail and their contractors. I caught up again with Nadia to find out how the meeting went. Nadia, thank you for joining me again. So, you arranged a meeting with Network Rail, and this was on a Monday afternoon, I believe?
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't sound to me to be tremendously convenient for householders. Were many of them able to come along?
Well, we were really surprised with the turnout. We actually had 32 apologies, so you can imagine. We were thinking, 32 people can't make it. Who's going to be able to make it? But actually, we had over 30 residents, as well as four councillors, two Lib Dems and two Conservatives. It was really well attended.
Okay, so that is a real demonstration of the level of concern amongst people, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. No, it was very pleasing to see, and to have everybody in the same room who all felt the same way.
Right, okay. So what did you find? Were Network Rail receptive to your concerns? I mean, what was their attitude?
They actually really were. They came intending to listen to us, and they really did. Obviously, they put their point across as well, that this is safety critical work, which we did understand. But they were also very willing to listen to our concerns. And it was actually really helpful that the contractors came along as well, because they're the ones who are basically on the ground doing the work. And they were able to give us details that we needed to hear.
Okay, so that all sounds good. Now, before, when I spoke to you, one of the things that you were kind of worried about was actually you weren't entirely sure what they were planning to do. Did they make their plans clear?
Clearer. There are still a few concerns, but they definitely outlined what would be, I suppose, the most work would be done 6.5 metres from the railway. So now we understand what that 6.5 metres actually is. And then further away with the large trees, which are generally much further away than the 6.5, it would then be assessed on striking distance to the railway. So we definitely got a little bit more. What we don't quite understand still is exactly what they mean by striking distance. Do they mean if the tree fell, it would be right on the railway? Do they mean it would be a few metres away, but still a danger? There are still things like that to sort out.
Okay, but you, as you say, you are a bit clearer.
You've
said that they listened. Were they able to offer any compromise?
Yes, I think towards the end, when we really got into the nitty-gritty of it, they basically said, we will communicate with you the whole way through. If a tree does need felling, we will be knocking on your door and explaining why. And if we think a tree maybe just needs the top taking down again, we will negotiate this with you. So really, it's just all about, I think, holding them to that.
Right. Right. Mm. Okay. I mean, your main concern, as you've said, actually, was protecting mature trees, and they form a sort of a strip between your gardens and the railway cutting. Because you're concerned about the loss of habitat for wildlife.
Yes.
Now, had Network Rail carried out any wildlife assessments before they did the works?
Yes, they carried out an ecological survey, which we actually just received on the day through the Freedom of Information Act. It was, as far as we could see, it was incomplete. So this did raise concerns about what happened on the other side of the cutting, Gurney Court Road, where, of course, a lot of trees have already been felled.
Yep.
That's something we'll probably look into, because from what we could see, they didn't really know for sure whether there were bats, for example, living in those trees, and they hadn't made any provision for them.
Okay, and just to be clear, it's illegal to disturb bats,
yes.
So therefore, chopping down trees, if they had known there were bats, would have been illegal, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, obviously, we can't say for sure that that's what happened, and it's very difficult to prove now that the trees have gone.
Yeah.
But it just shows a lack of care on their part.
Okay. Mm. So, Is this a job well done? Is this finished? Or is this an ongoing thing, Nadia?
I think it's an ongoing thing. I think it's really promising, and it's really good that we've opened a dialogue with them and they're willing to listen. I think it's now just watching really, really closely, making sure that they actually do what they've assured us they're going to do.
So just keeping an eye out, like
yes,
you say.
Yes.
And this almost certainly will be an issue sort of along the railway track throughout the district, won't it? What would your advice be to other trackside residents when they get that note through the door saying that they're coming along to chop down trees or to put up a fence or to clear vegetation management, that's
yes,
the term, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
I would say just talk to your neighbours. You will be so surprised how many people will feel just as passionately about this as you do. Talk to your neighbours. Form a WhatsApp group. That's what we did, and it's been absolutely brilliant because it means that when one individual does another thing, everybody knows about it. Yeah. We can all act together. It's much, much more powerful.
Okay, and to get in touch with Network Rail, because actually, you know, compromise is possible.
Yes, yeah, get in touch with Network, and it makes a huge difference if you all get in touch with Network Rail, because then they have to listen.
Yeah.
Sign any petitions. There are two petitions going at the moment. I'm just thinking anything else that we did, Network Rail. Oh, yes. Get in touch with your councillors.
Another good point
yes,
there.
Yeah.
Nadia, thank you very much indeed for coming in and for that advice.
Thank you, Amanda.
Now, I did ask Network Rail if they'd like to come in for an interview or comment, but I've not heard back from them. Now, the swallows, which swoop around our city during the summer, have now headed back to Africa. And I do know enough about birds to know that things like geese, they migrate. They fly down to the UK from places like Scandinavia to escape the harsh winter there. But I did not realise that bird migration is much more common than people like me think. I spoke to Dan Fletcher from St Albans RSPB to find out more. Dan, thank you for joining me. So is it true that only quite a small minority of UK birds don't, in fact, migrate?
Well, there are different sorts of migration. There's obviously the summer migration and the winter migration when birds have travelled quite some distance and they're only here for a certain period of time, like the swallows, which have all left us now, for example. But a lot of birds do move around depending on the seasons, and so we may see the same type of bird, but actually the bird that we're seeing has come from Scandinavia or just the northern part of Britain down to the southern part of Britain. And I think the Gulf Stream does keep Britain, certainly the southern part of Britain, warmer than much of the rest of Europe. So a lot of birds do head westwards as well as southwards at this time of year to take advantage of that.
And, so we're a popular holiday destination.
We are a popular winter holiday destination, definitely, and to some extent in the summer too, yeah.
Okay. So birds that we kind of think of as our own, you know, the birds in our garden, things like robins and blackbirds, actually, even they move around then.
They do. Certainly blackbirds, that we do have an influx of European blackbirds this sort of November through to March. There's a bit of a urban myth that you can tell the European ones because they've got a darker beak. Well, the male blackbird traditionally has a yellow beak with a yellow ring around its eye. But if you see one with a darker beak in the wintertime, people have thought those were European. In fact, male blackbirds that have hatched this summer will also have black beaks until next summer, whether they're from Europe or this country.
Oh, I see. So just because they're younger?
Yes, just because they're younger, they haven't reached maturity. So yeah, it's hard to tell which ones are which. Yeah. They do all look very similar,
yeah,
but the numbers and certainly bird ringing shows where birds have travelled from.
Okay, and so they're all just there enjoying our gardens.
Yes.
Altogether.
Yeah, so even humble birds like the dunnock, the hedge sparrow, we've got ringing evidence to show that some come from Norway down to the south of England, which is, for a little bird like that, is quite a long way.
Well, a little bird that also doesn't look like a long-distance flyer,
no,
does it?
No, exactly. Exactly, but it's warmer here. There's more food.
Wow.
than in parts of Norway.
Well, isn't that amazing?
And even the smaller birds, goldcrests, for example.
So super tiny birds.
Super tiny birds travel long distances,
yeah,
if they need to, because of because of the weather.
Yeah. So also, I'd seen that sort of birds that don't necessarily migrate so much in England, as in other parts of the world, they behave completely differently. Is this right as well?
It is. I mean, and it's all down to food and climate. And if the birds need to migrate because of the weather, then they will do. If they don't need to migrate because they can have what they need all year round, then they won't.
Yeah.
And we're even seeing with the effects of climate change that some of our traditional migratory birds do overwinter in this country. So swallows, there are some parts in Cornwall along the south coast where you may see a swallow in December.
Wow.
Because there's still just about enough in the form of flying insects for it to overwinter.
Oh, right.
And it will be interesting to see how, as times change, how bird populations...
Yes,
differ.
How that will develop and how their behaviour will change, isn't it? I mean, it must be a really exciting time to be a bird watcher at the moment with all the sort of comings and goings. Now, you mentioned the swallows have gone, but what kind of birds have you seen around St. Thomas that have been arriving?
So some of the winter arrivals are the familiar sorts of birds, maybe to people who've a bit of an interest in it. The winter thrushes are coming here already, the redwings and the fieldfares. You can on a starry night in October and November, you can often hear the high-pitched sort of sound. It's a seep sort of noise that a redwing makes as it's migrating. They're coming from Scandinavia.
Are they flying at night?
Yeah, and they fly at night. Guided by the stars, and they're piling into this country at the moment. Field fares come a little bit after them, but they're starting to come here as well. Siskins and lesser redpoles, they're two types of finches. The siskin is like a northern version of a greenfinch, and a redpole has a red bit on its head and mainly brown. I've saw siskins at the watercress beds down in St Albans last week, so they're here for the winter now. And
wonderful.
Lesser redpoles have been reported locally as well.
Do you know, they're such hardy little things, aren't they? Say, really quite small, and they kind of look a bit decorative, not particularly serious. But these are proper travellers.
They are long distance travellers, definitely. Yes,
yeah.
And they have to get across the North Sea, which is not an
no
easy feat.
No mean feat. Yeah. No
indeed,
mean
yeah.
feat. Yeah, left no iron devices, I'd have trouble with that. And for something the size of one of those tiny birds, yeah, an amazing thing to do. So, what a good places. You've mentioned the watercress beds. They're just down off sort of like Ramsby Roadway down there, isn't it?
Yes, just next to the River Ver,
yes.
where the Auburn Way intersects the River.
That's right. There's some springs there, aren't there? Mm-hmm. What other places are good for finding migrants now?
So a couple of local hotspots. One is Tittenhanger Gravel Pits. Some listeners may have read an article in the Hearts Advertiser recently about Tittenhanger. And that's a place that birdwatchers go to on a regular basis. All sorts of birds have been seen there, over 200 different species over the years. So
wow.
There are various migrants coming in there
at the
moment.
And are those birds that are coming to stay there, or are they sort of using it as a sort of stopping off point for further travel?
Both of those things happen. I think a bird that's travelling that maybe needs water, a duck, for example, will... If it is migrating, and yesterday there was a goosander at Tittenhanger, which is a northern sea duck, but it does go on some rivers, some inland waterways. That was seen briefly at Tittenhanger. I think it probably was flying south. It saw
yes.
a body of water. It landed for a break to eat some fish.
Yes.
And then it will move on again.
Which sort of demonstrates the importance of having these topping up spots along the way, doesn't
Definitely,
it?
Yes.
I mean, so if we want to try and help migrant birds, perhaps, is there any potential for doing that in our gardens?
Well, November through to March are prime times for feeding birds in gardens when food is becomes a bit scarcer. During the autumn, there's generally quite a lot of food around, but it becomes harder as the winter comes on. And now is also the time to think about cleaning your peanut feeders or fatball feeders. Birds do get diseases from
food waste that sort of accumulates
or just waste from the birds. So it's time to check the feeders that you've got, make sure they're completely clean, and
yes.
that does stop some of the the damage that you see to birds' legs or
yes.
even mortality.
And I suppose, as we've just been talking about, I mean, these birds moving from all over the place, of course, bringing diseases with them as well.
Well, there's been some interesting research recently on chaffinches, which shown that the people have observed more of a scaly leg problem or tanglefoot, where you can see sort of lesions on the legs, and that increases in the wintertime because chaffinches are coming from Europe to Britain because it's warmer.
Yeah.
And yes, that does happen. So all the more reason to keep things clean here.
Yeah, excellent. So just looking forwards, the RSP Big Garden Bird Watch, got
yes,
that to look forward to in January?
Yes, January 26th or 28th of January is when that happens. People can register from the 12th of December, so not too long now.
Yep.
And that continues to be a big favourite. Lots of people look
yes.
out for an hour
yes.
During that time.
Lovely, easy things to do, very well supported.
And those who want to do it on a longer basis, the BTO, the British Trust for Ornithology, do their Garden Bird Watch, which is a weekly recording of birds seen in gardens and
yeah.
the trends that you've seen or that they've seen, they were the people who discovered this thing about the chaffinches that I've just mentioned.
Yes, so lots of useful citizen science going on
definitely,
with that particular
yeah.
bird watch. Good to know about. Thank you very much indeed for
no, you're very welcome.
About that.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Dan Fletcher of St Albans RSPB. And rest assured, here on Environment Matters, I'll make sure you're kept updated about when to register for the Big Garden Bird Watch, so you won't miss out on that. So remember, you can listen to any edition of Environment Matters by going to the Radio Verulam website, www.radioverulam.com/podcast, where you can listen to all of your favourite shows. You can follow me on Twitter at @RV_environment. I'll give you notice about the things that we'll be covering on the show. And we've got a Facebook page too. Or you can drop me a line at amanda@radioverulam.com. So if you've got a comment about the show or if you've got ideas about the kind of things that you'd like me to cover, then do just get in touch. So I will be back at the same time next week. But until then, go and take a look at a few birds. And thank you for listening.